Are there any questions? Yes.
I was just wondering, how do you reconcile following the Buddhist path to enlightenment as a layperson while having like a foot in the world and a foot in the spiritual world? Like, I feel at times it's like you're being torn in two different ways. So I find that very challenging.
Well, you're very brave. I couldn't do it. I just jumped in. I could not do one foot in each. I was constantly torn apart, and I tried when I was 23 to be a nun. I was a nun for 4 years in India before I took to this particular tradition of nunship, and I got sucked back into the world, and then I just couldn't do it, and I went back to monastic life. And that was 30 years ago. So I feel like this works for me, because I can't do two things. I can't multitask at any level anymore. So I think, but if you have right livelihood, if you follow the Eightfold Path and keep the five precepts at least, then that's pretty good base foundation. Many lay people during the time of the Buddha became stream winners, once returners, and non-returners. But anybody that became completely enlightened would be living a very different lifestyle. So it's not an obstacle to be a layperson. It's just more challenging. And you have to have a lot of focus and determination to keep your, you know, protect your practice so that your lay life, your activities don't erode away from what you value. You have to examine, well, what do I value? Do I want my mind to develop, or do I want a temporary happiness, which I then can't reclaim in any way? Any experience that you think back to, you can look through all your photo albums. Oh, you don't keep albums these days. All your archives. All your archives, the virtual digital archives. And you flip through them, and then they do nothing for you. They really just make you happy for a few seconds. But then if somebody were to come along and slap you in the face, what would those photographs do for you? Nothing. You would not be able to protect yourself from a very heated state of mind, from even suing this person and take him to court, or get involved in some unsavory activity or violent feeling in your heart. And these kinds of moments of violence or hateful ill will or strong levels of greed, where you'll go into debt to get to possess something that you need. But we don't really need it. But we'll go into debt to get it. Or we'll go on some holiday to, you know, we'll go into debt to travel somewhere. Then we finish the holiday and we're back in our miserable world. We can't squeeze happiness out of our memories anymore. So if we can realize that, then that helps us to say, I've got to use my time better. I've got to balance how I spend my time. And I've got to devote my mind to the development of the faculties, the faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration of mind, and wisdom. Take time to develop these faculties, which in a moment of crisis will be right there. I remember once I was in India traveling in a very ramshackle vehicle, and it went over a terrible bump, and I was thrown into the roof of the vehicle, and a nail went in my head. And then blood was pouring down from my head. And I thought, I'm going to die. This, you know, I thought, this is it. I'm about to die. And my thought at that moment was, where was my mind when this happened? And I was sitting there in the vehicle, being thrust up and down like this with all these bags of rice and goats and whatever else was in the vehicle. And I was thinking of my teacher, and my heart was full of gratitude. And I thought, oh, okay, I can die, because I had so much gratitude in my heart. I had such a sense of completion. But I didn't die, obviously. And so that's because I've been practicing mind states of gratitude a lot. Because I remember my teacher all the time. And I remember the Buddha all the time. Like you practice this, and then instead of thinking about how much you have to save up to buy, you start to use your mental formations to direct them towards the gold rather than towards the world. I mean, Nibbana. Just like the Ganges River is directed towards the ocean, so this mind can always be directed towards Nibbana, towards fulfilling the path instead of falling off the path because of worldly aims and values. And that you can do in lay life too. You're walking on your way to work, or you're walking from your car to the office, or you're standing in line in a shop to buy something, and instead of your mind being filled with greed, ill will, memories that make you irritated or frustrated, or desires about what you need to do tomorrow, and then you feel pressured because you have such a list of things you need to do, you just bring your mind to pure present awareness. You're holding the object that you want to buy. You feel the weight of it. You feel compassion for the person at the cash register who looks miserable. And you send them metta, karuna, mudita, upeka. And then they, next thing you know, it's your turn. And you leave the store, but you didn't get impatient for 1 second. So then your mind has not been poisoned by impatience or by irritation. So every situation of city life, of daily life, is an opportunity for practice if we have enough development of the faculties to keep coming back to the present moment and not making excuses that I can't do this. We have to just be courageous and say, I can. You know, the little train that thought it could or that thought it couldn't. I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. Chug a log up the hill, and then you get up, and then on the way down, I knew I could. I knew I could, I knew I could. But we have to do that practically every minute until we develop so much fortitude and so much, like we have, our gas tank is more full, so we're not running on empty, but we're constantly emptying. We're not filling our minds with rubbish. We're emptying out the rubbish every minute. So then we have enough space to be grateful, to be generous, to be pure-hearted, to be kind, to be skillful, to be nonviolent, to be selfless, to be compassionate, to be forgiving, to be wise, to be courageous. Even in the face of something horrific, we have a choice. To be courageous or to be a coward. To stay, to endure, to suffer without whining. Because we have to. We all have to suffer. We all have to leave the body. Every one of us. These bodies are not who we are. And then consciousness will go wherever we've been directing it. If we've been directing it with ill will, we're going to go to an abiding that is not wholesome. But if we direct it to what is pure, then we may not have to come back again, ever. And that's the true freedom. No matter how the world pressures us from outside, no matter how external conditions pressure us from outside, if we know all of these things to be immaterial, insignificant, empty, not valuable. It's because we value them through our ignorance. But if we don't place value on those things, they will not create any pressure. Then that will free us to be moment by moment present for what is arising within us through the purity of our understanding. And then we will not be pulled out. And then the pressure will not touch us. We won't rush for the world. We can go mindfully in a measured way, live with modesty and integrity and intrepidity. We can be more fearless. It's because we're intimidated by the world. We allow our own opinions that are conditioned by the world to intimidate us, and then the opinions of everyone else. We are really enslaved. We're in really a predicament. But once we recognize that deeply, moment by moment, you know, the chains lock us in, and then we gently unlock them by our right view, over and over again, until the chains don't snap back. It's because of habit. The mental formations keep blocking us into greed, hatred, and delusion. But our own internal attitude will bring up that understanding of how to free ourselves moment by moment. And eventually, we develop a greater ability to sustain that right view and that freedom from worldly pressure, freedom from worldly conditionality. Because there's more and more space, the true space of truth within us. And then we can breathe. Otherwise, we have no breath even. We can't even be with our breath because our wanting to be loved or be approved of or belong to that which we don't belong to, which isn't true, it's false, that will subside. That will cease. That will come to cessation. That's the stopping we have to do. So basically, we have to not use our smartphones. Now, how do you do that? Okay, you use it a little bit. But most everyone is addicted to it by now. It's just an addiction. We feel that we can't live without it. Well, we were born without it. Most of us lived our lives without it. And suddenly, we have this... We're less and less able to come to cessation because now we have another, it's like an umbilical cord to samsara. And we believe that without it we can't survive. It's pretty scary. But you have enough perspective where the knowledge takes root. And use that as an island of refuge in your heart. And always come back to it so that the world cannot steal that from you. Even your cell phone cannot steal that from you. Turn it off at night. Turn it off whenever you can. Just turn it off for a week. Go on a meditation retreat for 10 days and see how still your mind will become and how joyful you will feel. Because all of us are rushing so fast. We can't see the beauty within us or the beauty on the outside that helps us to stop enough to feel the beauty within us. That's why the natural world is so precious. That's why the Buddha told us, go to the roots of trees and practice. Because in the wilderness of the forest, in the wilderness of the ocean, there's nothing. It's raw. It's just nature. There's nothing wrong. There's death everywhere. There's life everywhere. But it's all so pertinent, so relevant, so alive in us, it so embeds in us the universality of impermanence, of suffering, of emptiness. And then we feel this, all things are, everything is well. We just feel peace, even though things are constantly dying in the wilderness, all the time. But it doesn't destroy us to see that. There's no maliciousness. It's a different kind of violence. It dies down. So spend more time alone without all the artifacts. Go to a monastery. Shave your head. There's no guarantee. This is not a guarantee. People can live in a monastery and completely fritter away their time in useless things, like administration of the monastery. This is the kind of hell realm that I find myself in. It's not why I became a nun, to administer. But I do it as an act of service. I want the place to survive.